The views and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of our sponsors. Ha!
Welcome to the Small Business Hour with your host, Mark Dio. It's 60 minutes of red-hot talk to help you develop your small business.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. My name is Mark Dio. Joining me, the inimitable Matthew Walker. We're coming to you live from Los Angeles. And, of course, we're your small business advocates. Our show is dedicated to helping you to become more positive, more productive, and a whole lot more profitable, bringing you experts and expert advice every single week to help you to run your business more effectively. And that's what it's all about this week. A lot of stuff happening in the news, Matthew. We're going to be talking today with, we have a guest who's going to be talking about an interesting topic of how to manage unmanageable employees. How to manage unmanageable employees. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Most people would say just fire them. Just fire them, right? Get somebody who is manageable. Well, I guess that's easier said than done. Nevertheless, we'll be talking about with her about that topic, which I think is pretty relevant, I think, for small business players today. But I guess there's some positive things happening in the news as well. Apparently, job growth is up, not as up as high as it should be, but there is one statistic that people might be surprised about, Matthew, that you and I will not be surprised about. Mm-hmm. And that is most of the job growth is coming from small business. Now, we're not surprised at that. But I think when people see, because of the visibility of big brands, big consumer brands, Microsoft, yeah. You know, Bank of America.
They're the ones they see the commercials for on TV all the time.
Yeah, the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, you know, these are the big companies, oil companies. You know, these are the big companies that sort of have the brands that we use daily. People sort of interact with these brands on a daily basis. And so, you know, we tend to think that, well, those are the people that, you know, are employing everyone, right? Well, wrong. Those are not the people. Not only are they not the people that are employing most of the folks in this country, but they are not the people who are contributing to the job growth. In fact, Matthew, those are the very companies that are contributing to the shrinking of jobs here in America.
Absolutely.
And so it's important for people who, you know, maybe are not involved in small business, or maybe even people who are, to understand that. Maybe even more important for small business players to understand that. So why? It's encouraging, because sometimes I think as a small business player, Matthew, you can feel like you're part of a dying breed. Mm-hmm. You know, you feel like a velociraptor. You know, you're going to be dying off soon, like a dinosaur. It does feel that way. When we have to face some of the ridiculous challenges
and
we have to face.
It feels like the government policies are set up to try to make you go extinct so they can give more money to the giant businesses.
It certainly does. And, you know, you would think it's obvious because regardless of party, regardless of partisanship, regardless of ideology, everyone, Democrat, Republican, Independent, talks about how important small business is. But none of them do anything about it. It's kind of interesting. I was at a 4th of July party last week. And you know my politics run the other way. But my partner at the design firm, Max, his politics are opposite of mine. And so I ran into the Obama for President 2012 committee people. Here in L.A., actually in the South Bay, I guess the South Bay chapter of the gang who was trying to elect Obama. And so they were very nervous at meeting me, of course. They were all kind of nervous and stuff. I said, no, don't worry. I said, let me ask you now. Let me just ask you. Why should we vote for Mr. Obama again? Not to say that anyone else is going to get elected. He's going to get elected. We all know that.
You look at the Republican field right now, and you're like, who are they? Who's running? It's
Yeah. There's just nobody there. I don't know. They're asleep at the wheel. But so he's going to get elected. So don't they got all happy and stuff. I said, I'm not going to vote for him. I'll vote for, Yogi Bear before
It doesn't even matter in California with the current electoral system anyways. He's going to win by 12 points in California no matter what individual does. So, yeah.
If all 2.5 million people vote for the other guy, he's still going to win. That's a sad thing. I don't know. It doesn't seem like a democracy if you ask me. But nevertheless, they could not give me a reason. They were stumbling around and then they said, well, he did everything he said he was going to do.
I said, okay, well, that's not true.
I said, well, let's say.
How about restoring funding to the Small Business Administration? How about
that? That's what I said. I said, look, I don't know about what he said he would do with the economy or what he said he would do with social services or what he said I was quite honest because I don't. I really don't. I said, the only thing I do know is what he said he was going to do with small business. And so I start ripping off, the fact that, there's contracting, federal contracting promises that were made.
Any press release from the American Small Business League and go down the list.
I'm ripping off all this stuff, and their mouths are dropping. And then they said, Jim, what about Jim? They said, Jim, he's supposed to be the small business expert guy. Well, that's such a small part of really the health of our economy. I said, What? He's like, oh yeah, it's just a small part. How can you? But this is what people think, Matthew.
Yeah, people tend to equate big business with the state of the economy as a whole because that's where you see the news stories. I mean, if something happens that affects, GM, that's going to get a lot more news play than something that affects 10,000 small businesses that equal the size of GM.
Right. Oh yeah. So at any rate, we're talking about this, and he's like, well, I have to concede I have to do some research on that because you seem to be knowledgeable of it. I said, well, that is really the only thing I'm knowledgeable of, but yes, you need to look into that. So that's how we ended it, and we got our margaritas, and we started talking about the fireworks. But nevertheless, those are the Obama – they're the Obama guys here, and even they don't know,
Yeah, so, it's an issue that they just – nobody in mainstream politics – gives anything more than lip service to the real issues that affect small businesses.
Yeah. So, I mean, job growth in 2011 is now averaging 126,000 per month. In other words, there's 126,000 new jobs added every month. Of course, that didn't happen this month. That was, I think it was like 18,000 or something.
Yeah, it goes up and down.
The average. So, now the job growth, which is considered sort of the normal workforce growth rate, is 150,000 per month.
Yeah, so we're lagging by a little bit.
Not a lot.
Yeah, a little
not
bit.
A lot. Not a lot. Now, where do those jobs come from? 96% of the jobs. 96%. So that's out of the 126,000, that's like 123,000.
Mm-hmm.
Come from small businesses.
Yeah.
And now think about that. Every month, 123,000 jobs come from small businesses.
And we're getting like 3,000 from big businesses.
So wouldn't you think that you would, to spur the economy, that you'd want to literally, I mean, just give money to small businesses?
Do whatever it takes to help. Yeah, they're the ones
who
do all the work. Yeah,
you can just give them money. You don't even have to say, give us a, a report on what are they going to do with the money?
Yeah, and these numbers, by the way, come from a big business. They come from ADP.
I know. Well, of course, because ADP.
They do all the payroll and they know.
Well, but like our sponsor, CBON, they service small business.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the few companies that literally services small paychecks. I mean, these are companies, they service Staples. They service small business.
Yes.
So, of course, they're going to be talking about stuff in the interest of small business. Now, that's not going to say that they're – I'm sure they'll take money from the government if they offer it to them. And the government's probably more likely to offer ADP, Staples, and Paychex money than it is small business.
Absolutely.
So I don't understand. You look at this graph, that graph that goes back, and of course we don't have video here, but if you look at the graph that goes back to 2001, you've sort of job growth. You sort of have this very stabilized job growth, this almost flat curve, until you get to January of 2008, and the thing just dives down to almost zero. Well, not zero. It dives down to negative 1,000.
Yeah.
Because of the fact of all the unemployment that's, when the recession started.
That's when everything really kicked in. From you could see sort of trends, everything leveled off, and then it starts to dip down, and then it just goes right down, right in the toilet, and then it's sort of been coming back up since then.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess my point is that, while large business is shedding jobs, literally more than 500 jobs on average per month on a continuous basis is being shed by large business, okay? Think about it. Almost 500 jobs on an aggregate average basis every month being shed by large business. Small business is adding 123,000. So it really is hard to believe that our government, that our Congress, our senators, our even local officials, the White House. I mean, no one really gets this. Or if they get it, they still give billions of dollars to big businesses and banks and stuff. How could that be?
Yeah, they give them. There's still huge subsidies for the oil industry.
Tax breaks.
The oil industry right now has had record profits where, in the last two or three years, they've made more profit than they have in the entire existence of the oil industry. Like, if you add up all the profits they've made since the mid-1800s until today, and then you add up the profits they've made in the last 2 years, they've made more money in the last 2 years than they have in the entire history of their company. Cumulatively, which is crazy.
Cumulatively. Yeah, well, it almost seems like...
And we're still giving them tax breaks.
Well, it almost seems like that they're saying to these oil companies, look, we know that you have kept all of us, Democrats and Republicans, in office for the last 20 years. We know that. And we know that you can't fail. You're not too big to fail. You're too friendly to us to fail. It's not too big to fail. It's too friendly to fail. Because if they were concerned with too big to fail, they would be giving money to the small businesses who contribute to the economy, not detract from it.
Yeah.
We know you're our friends. You give us money so we can get reelected. We can't get to those small business guys because they're so fragmented. So therefore, we're going to give you some time by giving you a couple of billion dollars each so that you can build your coffers up to figure out, how you can get into the alternative energy business. But they still don't do it. They put it in their pockets. They give it to their CEOs and their senior executives who have yachts sailing around the Mediterranean. Senior executives have taken more money. A big company senior executives have taken more money this year than any of the last 10 years combined in terms of stock options, various different credits, various different performance pay, even though their companies are going bankrupt.
Yeah, their companies are shedding money, and then they're getting more and more performance bonuses without any actual performance.
So I'm just a little confused. The only thing I can figure is that, these politicians, they can't get reelected based on small business. So nevertheless, we have to press on. There are things that we will do as small business operators that will help us to continue to succeed. We have now 52% of the gross domestic economy. That will grow. We contribute more jobs than any other players combined. That will grow. And in time, we will take over this economy.
It's all like you said. You've been saying for well over a decade that big business is dying and big businesses are going to go away. And ultimately, they're either breaking up into smaller units like the GE model where they sort of said, hey, we're just going to segment our business into a lot of small businesses, or they're just going to basically get too big and there's too much bloat. They're going to go belly up. Yep. And small businesses are agile and we're able to compete effectively when things are fair. And hopefully they will – hopefully they'll be fair for small businesses in the future.
Well – I have hanging in my office here where I do this show, Matthew, a big picture. You've seen it. Of a Marine. Not that I am a Marine, because people come into my office and they go, oh, you were a Marine. I'm like, no, because everybody's a SEAL these days, right? Obviously, you can look at me and tell that I was not a Marine, okay?
Obviously.
Thank you, Matthew, because, you know, you couldn't make the water boy for the Marines looking at you.
But nevertheless, I
have this Marine in this battle armor sitting here in my office because that's what we are. We are Marines. We are, as small business operators, we are Marines. We are out there. Doing the impossible, we leave no one behind. We take no prisoners, and you know what? We persist. We move on. Good economy, bad economy. We continue to grow. Hoorah!
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works, and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results. Winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster. Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at complianceposter.com. Ha!
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. Mark Dio, Matt Walker with you, coming in live from Los Angeles. Today, we've got an interesting topic that we're going to be talking about in this segment. Think about this. What do you do when your employees are rude? Maybe you have an employee and he is consistently rude. You've talked to him about it. You've discussed this with him. You've given him warnings. He's a great employee, but he just is rude. Or maybe she is just arrogant, cocky, kind of an egomaniac. She's a great employee, gets everything done on time, but oh my God, you just want to put a bag over her head and gag her. Well, you can't do that. Well, no, you can't do that. Now, Mark Dio says you can't do that. What do you do? How do you manage unmanageable employees? How do you motivate them? How do you deal with those unruly folks? And that is that's what our guest has to talk with us about today. And she is the author of a book called Managing the Unmanageable. She was named the Generational Guru by the Washington Post, and she's built sort of a global business dealing with some of the larger companies around the world. I would imagine smaller companies as well, and helping them to really manage their people more effectively. She's the author of award-winning book, prior book called A Manager's Guide to Coaching. And please help us welcome Ann Lower. Ann Lower. Ann, welcome to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBN Network.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it is a pleasure to have you because I think this is a common problem, whether you're a large company or a smaller company, even a little professional firm where there's maybe five or six employees. Oftentimes, people can act in an unmanageable way. And maybe it's an event occurring in their life, or maybe that's just the way they are. And that might be separate from them actually doing a good job or, you know, performing well. But the human sort of relations ability sometimes isn't what it needs to be. And so that's what your book is about, Managing the Unmanageable. Now, what prompted you to – you obviously are involved in coaching business leaders and that sort of thing. But what prompted you to write this book, Managing the Unmanageable?
I have to say it was actually my clients. I work for a number of clients, a number of startups, as well as large organizations, and we would coach and we would work on improving organizational effectiveness and how to be more effective, profitable, et cetera, et cetera. And yet what I found was is we were spending a huge amount of time in each session talking about Mary, whatever Mary was, Mary the gossip, Mary the lurker, whatever it was, and we would spend sometimes up to half the time talking about her. And I thought, you know what, I need to help them figure out a way how to handle Mary so that we can get back to getting bottom line profits here.
Now people listening might say, well, hang on a second, guys. What's up with you silly consultants? Just fire Mary. But it's kind of a little more complicated than that because I run into the same thing, and my people do consulting and coaching as well with our clients, is that it's a little bit easier, a little bit more difficult than that because Mary might be a great employee. She might be very productive. Matter of fact, she might be the most productive person, and it isn't unusual for some of these people to be the most productive people in the office. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. And not only do you have that whole angle to look at, Mark, but the other side you have to look at is it's actually very costly to replace an employee. SHRM, Society for HR Managers, estimates that for an average manager employee, not a specialized employee, it costs 2.5 times their salary to replace them.
Absolutely.
By the time they've started to lose interest, let them go, ramp up a new employee. So if someone is earning $50,000, say, to replace that person, it's going to cost up to $150,000. So as a manager of a small business, you have to really think about what do you want to do with your resources.
I absolutely agree with that. And the other part of this is that if we know how to deal with these folks effectively, oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes, we can turn that around. So let's talk. Let's spend most of our time talking about that because I think everybody resonates with this issue. What do you do? How do you? Or let's start this. Can you manage an unmanageable personality?
So as my answer as always is to people, it's yes and. So a few parts there. One is that the first chapter of our book says, are unmanageable employees made or born? Because a lot of people say, oh, she's just waking up trying to make my life miserable today. A lot of that is what I would call someone who is an unmanageable employee that is born. Now, there are some that, you know, really are just not cut out to work in 9-to-5 society. But for the most part, most people want to have a fulfilling job, want to do a good job, and there is something going on with themselves or with the organizational structure that is causing these conflicts and problems.
Okay, so you say with themselves or the organizational structure. Is that one of the first things that you look into and you look at? Is the environment what is affecting this person, or is this coming from within them?
That's one of the things we look at. That's actually step three. We have a five-step process called the 5 C's. And the first step is actually just commit or quit. And because as I said earlier, it's like, just make up your mind. Either commit to the employee, commit to helping the employee turn around, or cut your losses. And we have a whole cost-benefit analysis worksheet that you fill out to help you figure out. And after that, then you look into what you just suggested about what is the organizational role, how do we communicate, that type of thing. But following our 5C process will help the small business move through it within a 6 to 9 month period.
So the first C is commit or quit. What's the second C?
Communicate. And what we mean by this is we're not just talking about send an email or go do a tweet. What we're talking about here is communicate and get clear what is the actual problem. Because, Mark, you and I might think the problem is that this person is unproductive and is no longer meeting her goals. And Josephina might think the problem is something completely different. And so the second step is just communicate and get clear what is the problem at hand that needs to be fixed.
And you do this with the employee. You do this with, I suppose, with probably an HR person there. And you actually confront this person with their behavior, I would imagine, right? Say, this is what you're doing, and this is the effect.
And the real million-dollar question mark is, what is the impact of that? I can't stress this question enough. As you're working with employees who are manageable, employees who are unmanageable, what's the impact of that? What's the impact of this behavior? What's the impact on the team? What's the impact on you? What's the impact on the clients? What's the impact on the organization? You can ask that question in 100 different ways and really let them see the pain that is being caused. Because as a manager, you see that pain. You saw it 6 months ago, and you're wondering why it hasn't been fixed yet. But for the employee, they may not get that, oh, this action, this behavior is causing a lot of problems to my team, to the department, to the organization.
Right, right. And so at least helping them to see that and acknowledge that, I guess see it first and then acknowledge it, is critical. And I guess they have to take a certain amount of responsibility for that because, I mean, they could say, you know what, well, that's not my fault. That's you guys. You guys aren't managing people effectively. The department doesn't run right. And the hierarchy isn't set up right. It could be a million excuses. But at least we have now attempted to communicate to this employee.
Absolutely. And you said the key word there, Mark, acknowledging. To actually admit, yes, this is a problem. And yes, this is the impact it's having.
Yeah,
doesn't mean we're even getting close to action. But at least they're acknowledging, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because a lot of bosses avoid that. You know, they're conflict averse, and they don't even want to talk about that. You know, they just want to sort of work around that person. Okay, so what's the next C? The next C, that's the third one.
No, communicate's the second. Then clarify goals and roles is the third one. So what people are often very confused about what exactly is my goal? What is the team's goal? What is the organization's goal? And what is my role within all of that? And the analogy I use, I do a lot of work with the military, Mark, is as you're in the Navy, if you're just 1 degree off, you know, you're going to Madagascar instead of Kenya.
Yep.
And as an organization, if every employee is just 1 degree off, you know, manager says, oh, come on, Ann, we're pretty close. We're on the same page. I'm like, listen, you guys are on the exact same page, or else you're going to end up in Madagascar, let alone Australia.
Yeah, same page, same paragraphs. Yep, same line. Same letter, same word. We got to be right in sync. Okay, so we commit or quit. We communicate to the employee. We kind of clarify the goals, clarify their role. So now we've kind of educated them. What happens now?
Well, here's where the fourth C comes in. This is coaching. And what this is I use the term coaching. It's about my first book. What I mean in this book is it's really just about asking open-ended questions. It's just understanding what is going on? Because at this point, it's an inside job. A manager can do nothing to change an employee's behavior at this point. It's going to be an inside job. The employee has to decide for himself.
Yeah. Yeah,
and to do that, you have to ask them questions to get them to do their best thinking. So these are open-ended types of questions, very short, pointed questions, non-judgmental questions to start saying, all right, we got a problem. I'm committed to this. We're clear on what our goals and roles are. So what's going on, and how can we move forward? And having these coaching conversations.
So what would be an example of some of the questions that you might ask, Ann?
Depends on the situation. But let's say, for example, we're talking to the gossip. Happens all the time. Gossip, oh, it's just harmless fun, Ann. Come on, what are you so uptight about? And we start talking about what impact gossip has on the team, how can be detrimental for clients hear this gossip. So the question might be, it's now the fourth step, something like, well, what does gossip get you? In other words, what are you getting out of gossip? Or what else can gossip do to hinder achieving the goals? Those types of questions to get people to think, well, I guess I hadn't thought about that. I guess this is a little more serious than maybe I thought. And then you eventually, when they're ready, you take them to action and say, okay, well, what do you want to do to start curbing your gossip? How can we change this behavior, working with them and helping them think of a plan to do it together?
Mm-hmm. And so they might say something like, well, you know, it's harmless. We're not talking, you know, we're not trying to hurt anybody. We're just talking about things that happen. They really happen. I mean, you know, Susie did go to the restaurant and, you know, she did throw up in the corner and it was kind of hilarious. You know, and everybody laughed and even Susie laughed. I mean, you know, well, I know she was crying in the bathroom later, but, you know, I mean, it's just it happens to me, too. I mean, you want us to be in some sort of prison here?
Exactly. And what you just referred to, Mark, by the way, is we have a list we call hot tips at the end of chapter. Every chapter has this box, and it's exactly what you just said. It's comebacks to all those types of questions.
Oh, wow.
When Susie Q says that, we had so much fun with this part, Mark. When Susie Q says that, what do you say back to that person that brings it back? Well, we really need to bring it back on track. It's easy to get sidetracked about the party, about the story, blah, 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 and we need to bring it back on track about, so how is this hindering the organization? How is this hindering your career? And bringing it back on track without sounding mean or harsh, that type of thing.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that's great. That sounds like a great resource for business leaders, hiring managers. What's the fifth C?
So the fifth C is create accountability. So first we've committed, we've communicated, the goals and roles are clarified, we've coached, and now it's time to create accountability. And at this point, everybody starts to groan or moan because they're like, oh, come on. I told Mary to do it. Why do I have to check up on Mary? Mm. And the reason is because we're changing behavior, Mark. And changing behavior is a long, slow process. So we're not going to be, again, you know, micromanaging. It can be as very casual as, hey, remember last week you said you're going to take care of this on Tuesday. How'd that go? Mm. It's one way to show them that you're serious, you're paying attention, and that you do expect behavior to eventually change.
Right, right. And then I guess some consequences, right? I mean, if things aren't changing, especially with labor laws the way they are in Washington, D.C., as well as particularly in the state of California and New York, very stringent laws, we have to, you know, begin to oppose some consequences and document this stuff, right?
Exactly. And so that's part of the whole, again, our last chapter, we have a whole thing there about what do you do when things are not going as well as you want. Because sometimes, that's why the first, we're doing a full circle, that's why the first step is commit or quit. Because, you know what, if you do all this work and you do the cost-benefit analysis worksheet and it's still not working out, it's time to call it quits. Mm. And that is just a part of doing business, no matter how big or small you are. It's not something I advocate. It's not something that, you know, I recommend all the time. However, if you've taken all these steps and things are still not improving, you may just have the wrong person in the wrong spot. Mm-hmm. And then at our last chapter, we go through all that as well. You know, what do you need to do? How do you have that conversation so that it can be as seamless as possible at the end?
Absolutely. Well, and again, this is we tend to hire them based on sort of their, you know, previous responsibilities. But all that really doesn't matter at all. Really doesn't matter at all. Again, to some degree, if they are need to be technically adept, it matters in some regard. But primarily, it's not about what people do or what people have done. It's really about who they are. This is a very difficult thing to discover before we hire someone. We tend to hire them and then find out who they are rather than find out who they are and then hire them. But and that probably happens more often than not. So your book, I think, is very appropriate.
Thank you so much. I think it's going to be a great resource for a lot of people.
Yeah. Again, folks, talking to Ann Lower, I'm sorry, I put an A on the end of your name, sorry, Ann Lower, And the name of her book is Managing the Unmanageable. And how do you control those folks, that loose cannon, those loose lips, the grumbler? What a great resource for that. So go get the book, Amazon.com, wherever books are sold. And you too can go through the five steps and some great resources in how to respond and some of the legal issues and how to hold people accountable. So go check it out, Managing the Unmanageable. Thank you so much for being with us, Anne, and we'll look forward to seeing your book out on the bookstands and for you to have some great success with it.
Thank you, Mark. If anybody who would like to get a copy of the book, go ahead and go to unmanageableemployee.com.
All right. All right, folks, that was Ann Lohr, Managing the Unmanageable. You're listening to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBN Network. Go nowhere. We'll be right back.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
CBeyond, big solutions for growing your small business. For over 10 years, CBeyond has provided small businesses with the communication tools for success. We're proud to offer services such as local and long-distance voice, mobile, and broadband internet access, along with enhanced features like voicemail, email, web hosting, data backup, file sharing, VPN, and more. So as your business grows, we've got you covered. CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
Winning means sinking more shots, blowing away the competition, coming in first. Being second might have been okay for mom, but today, coming in second just gets you a pat on the back and a, hey, thanks for trying. Dale Carnegie Training gives you and your people the skills you need to win. For salespeople, how to be more strategic, earn and keep that important client. From prospecting to information gathering to negotiations to closing. For managers, it's how to win the commitment of your team. Build teamwork and loyalty like never before. A company where people excel. Dale Carnegie Training isn't some boot camp with a drill instructor who breaks you down and leaves you in a daze. And it isn't going back to school for years and pulling all-nighters while you're still trying to do your regular job. It's the right training for the real world that teaches you how to win more often. It works and it sticks. Call now, 562-427-1040. Face it, as a business owner, manager, or salesperson, you're paid for results. Winning results. So make winning a habit. Call 562-427-1040. Come on, you were made to win. 562-427-1040.
Are compliance issues keeping you up at night? Are you worried that your labor law posters may be out of date? Do you even know how to protect your business from fines of thousands of dollars? Without a dedicated compliance department, it's hard to remain on top of the constantly evolving labor law legislation at the state and federal level. That's why the experts at Compliance Poster Company provide their clients with a dedicated research department. The innovator of the all-on-one compliance poster. Compliance Poster Company has simplified labor law compliance. Just hang one poster and you're in compliance with all federal and state labor law mandates. Then when labor laws change, you'll receive an email to let you know and your restless nights. Call the compliance experts at Compliance Poster Company today at 1-800-817-7678. That's 1-800-817-7678. Once again, 1-800-817-7678. Or on the web at complianceposter.com. Ha!
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBeyond, the last communications company a small business will ever need.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Small Business Hour right here on the SBA Network. My name is Mark Dio. Joining me, of course, Matthew Walker. And again, we're coming to you live from Los Angeles. That was our guest, Ann Lohr, the author of the book, Managing the Unmanageable. Well, we've encountered this many times with our clients, unmanageable employees, Matthew. Many times.
Very much. When she was using the name Mary to refer to the problem employee, I was starting in my head, I was plugging in the names of all the ones that we've had with clients. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that sounds just like,
so and so at such and such. Yep. Well, and again, I mean, wouldn't you agree? I think the biggest issue is that people, hiring managers, leaders, owners, avoid the problem. They don't even want to talk about the problem, let alone address it. They downplay the problem. And again, if it's gossiping, that's kind of minor. But oftentimes the problems are far worse than that with employees. They are, and she's working with bigger companies. And so, usually there's a little bit better decorum with a larger company because there's a well-accepted culture and most people comply with the culture. There might be a few who depart from it. But with a smaller company, there isn't a well-formed culture to the firm. In other words, there's not a just as to kind of make this a little more educational for people, Matthew, there isn't an accepted way of acting. That when we talk about corporate culture, what we're talking about is an accepted way of conducting yourself. Okay, with a large company, there's been momentum for many years, and there have been many, many people coming in and out of the organization over the years, and some of the people have been with the organization for many years. And so that sort of way of acting has seeped into the fiber of the organization, so that when you walk in the door and you and again, just think about this, folks, and when you go to your next retail store, you go to your next sort of office visit, calm yourself, empty yourself, and walk into the door and then try to engage all of your senses, and you will feel the culture. Is it not true, Matthew? When you go to comedy gigs and stuff, you get that feeling, don't you, of the culture of the group that you're addressing?
Sure. I mean, you can tell what a gig is going to be like the instant you walk in the door. If you pay attention, you can see who's in the room, and you can tell sort of what they're going to laugh at and make adjustments as needed. Yeah.
And so that's the culture of the audience, and that is very much true of a group of people in a company. So when people depart from that culture, because everyone else is compliant, we're very, very late on confronting that person, if we even bother to confront them at all. And so I wanted to tell her, I was dying to tell her, that she needs to add this C for confrontation and mm-hmm. make it number 6, or maybe make it number 2. But I guess she was being sort of nice and had communicate in there. But I would substitute that with confrontation, because we have to confront people really kind of in a way that is friendly, and maybe in a way that's professional, of course. But we have to confront them in a way that's quite blunt for them to accept that behavior, or for them to even acknowledge that behavior. Because if they don't acknowledge that, if they don't accept that their behavior is dysfunctional, they're not going to correct. They're going to expect everyone else to correct. And so that's the critical thing. The other thing I wanted to talk about is, some of the things that we've learned from Brad Smart and Top Grading, Matthew. And this is work mm-hmm. we're doing with a lot of our clients now in recruiting the right people. And, people hear about this, what we like to call candidate targeting, which is similar to Top Grading, has been inspired by Top Grading. But it's actually quite different than Top Grading, but it is similar in its effect, in that we're really evaluating who people are before we hire them, rather than hiring them and finding out who they are. That is an extremely difficult thing to do, but if you can invest the time and the resources and gain some of that education in doing that, you can save yourself. Well, you might be able to save your company. For a small company, one dysfunctional employee will bring the entire company down. I have seen them do it. I have seen that. Matter of fact, we had a client who actually that happened to him. They literally went out of business, name any names, because of one dysfunctional employee. They weren't an owner. They weren't an investor. They weren't a silent partner. They had no money in this company. They weren't even a major employee of the company. They were kind of a minor employee. They brought the whole company down, because their dysfunctional behavior inspired other dysfunctional behavior and brought the company down. So recruiting the right people based on who they are is so absolutely critical today, absolutely critical. And especially in the state of California, Matthew, because it's hard to get rid of somebody once you have the nutcase, it's hard to get rid of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and in a small business, I mean, you're talking, let's say you're a small company and you've got 10 employees. And if one of them is a problem, that means 10% of your workforce is a problem.
Well, actually, Matthew, it means 40% of your workforce is a problem, because that one person now in a company of 10 probably interfaces with every person in the company, Matthew. Whereas if you have a company of 100 and you have even 5 people that are dysfunctional, right? they might only interface with 10 or 15 or 20 other people. But you see, this one person's interfacing with every single person in the company, Matthew. And so they're able to – and maybe they're not doing – I mean, it sounds like they're evil people, but, you know, they're just messed up, you know. They're just kind of psychologically messed up, and they're sort of out for their own, their own benefit. Or maybe they're just not educated in how to deal effectively with people, and they're not willing to be educated, you know. They can bring down the company very quickly because they interface with everyone in the company. So absolutely critical. If you want to know more about that, our candidate targeting program, I'm actually looking to do a Dale Carnegie course on this, actually. We've done this for companies through Dale Carnegie, Matthew, but we're looking to do a public course on this. So stay tuned for that. Maybe late this year or early next year, we're looking to do a candidate targeting class in helping managers to, you know, really, really find out who people are before they hire them, you know. So we'll talk more about that. But nevertheless, go check out Ann Lohr's book. I'm going to check it out, Managing the Unmanageable. I think I have it. I haven't cracked it open yet, but I'm going to. Nevertheless, there are, you know, while the economy is tough, Matthew, there are some businesses that are thriving. and there are more and more business starts are up. So there's more businesses starting up as people are laid off from their corporate America jobs. They're starting businesses. Two young ladies started a business in Arizona. Called the Goody Two's Toffee Company. Mm-hmm. Little company. It's a little firm. You get the feeling maybe they've got 10 people there. They kind of like started in their home, like a lot of businesses did, like I did. A lot of businesses start in their home, and they grow out from there and have had some, you know, pretty good steady growth and, you know, employing their relatives, you know, to keep expenses down. And they actually make toffee. They make toffee. They make sweets. And the company actually has done some things very smart, and they're beginning to grow. But one of the things they did, Matthew, was not get clearance on some logos that they had.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't get clearance on these logos. Now, they knew that these logos or this trademark name, I guess, was owned previously by a potential investor in the company, but they had a friendly departing with this investor, and he said, oh, don't worry about it. But now all of a sudden that came back to haunt them. So I want to just encourage, and you know, they dealt with it, actually the ladies dealt with it real well, and you know, they got it all cleared up and stuff. It cost them some money. But I think it's very important for small business folks to pay attention to these kind of things. And we don't, you know, we just like, for example, I've had clients taking stuff off the internet on Google Pictures. Is mm-hmm. it Google Images? I guess Google Images, right?
It's the running an image search. I mean, through any search engine.
I had a client. Now, you would think this is good. I could probably, people listening would say, oh, okay. Well, if they took pictures, Mark, and they actually use them in an ad, I can understand. But no, they put it in a PowerPoint presentation, and they did that PowerPoint presentation for one client, five people that were with one client. Well, it turned out that one of the people in the group that saw it knew someone who took the picture. I mean, if you can imagine such a bizarre mm-hmm. thing.
Wow.
Told that person told Getty Images, who they sold the picture to. Getty Images sent him a fine for like $10,000 per photo. So they had a $50,000 fine, and they had to actually resolve this. So, you know, go somewhere and purchase your images. You can purchase them real cheap, like $1 a piece. I'm going to have you purchase some for my PowerPoint presentation coming up, Matthew. And as simple as that. So get clearance on your stuff. Because if you don't, you know, the world is becoming a place where everything is shared, Matthew. Everything is shared on the internet, social media and all this stuff. Speaking of social media, tell us about Google mm-hmm. Plus, Matt. What's happening? Google Plus, new social media platform.
Google Plus has been around for about a week now, I guess. I think wow. It launched last Tuesday, and I've been online since last Wednesday with Google Plus, of course. So, of course, I'm one of the first ones out there using it. But basically, it sort of mimics the functionality that you would find on Facebook or any of the other social networks that have been around in the past. I think the big difference with this is that it's being run by Google, and it integrates fully into your Google account. And as such, what that means is that the Google Places or Google Plus rather, currently integrates fully with Google Chat, the GChat engine that works inside Google Mail, the Gmail client. It integrates with your Gmail client. And I think there are signs pointing towards what this is ultimately going to be, which is that it's ultimately going to plug in entirely to every application that Google has. So down the road, if you're a business and you've got you probably have a Facebook page right now, like a fan page for your business. Almost every business out there should have one. If you don't, give us a call because you need to have one of those. But what's going to happen is ultimately this is going to integrate with Google Maps and Google Places and Google Discussions and Blogger and every other Google tool out there.
Wow.
Is going to be integrated into Google Plus. So what that means is that for a business, when you have a social media thing that you're doing, and as you're shuffling your papers over there, you're probably going through your notes looking for what you're doing with our own Google Plus accounts, which we don't
That's
have yet.
That's exactly what I'm doing, Matthew. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah. What's going to happen is down the road, this is going to be integrated with the Google AdWords platform. It's going to be integrated with the Google Checkout platform. It's going to be integrated with Google Analytics. It's going to be integrated with Google Places. It's not yet.
Now, let me ask you this, Matthew. I just want to ask you this because I know that I've read, and that's what I was shuffling to see because I printed something out here that I've read somewhere in an article that this is like the most dangerous thing for violating privacy and that everything you do online now is going to be aggregated and stored by Google Plus. And the interesting thing is that Google Plus, I think, was created with the intent that you can maintain your privacy through their, I guess, their different, whatever they call it, channels or circles, yeah, or whatever it's called.
In terms of privacy, I've got two general thoughts on that. The first one is, if you want privacy on the internet, stay off of social networks. I need to explain this, Mark, because inherent to social networks is that you don't have privacy. That's the whole point of a social network.
What you post there, though?
The point is that you're sharing information with other people. If you don't want other people to see the information that you're sharing, don't share it on the internet.
I only want them – you see, here's what people are going to say, Matthew. They're going to say, I only want them to see what I want them to see. I don't want them to know – that I'm chatting with so-and-so, and I don't want them to know that I've got this Google account
then
here.
You can do that. It's not a problem if you manage your privacy settings, but most people do not. If you go onto Facebook and you just leave everything at the defaults, then other people are going to see what you're doing, and it's your own fault.
That's what I want you to talk
about. I have no sympathy for people who say, like, oh, somebody saw me post this, and I didn't want them to see it. Well that's because you
let them. You're a super geek. You know how to do this stuff, but most people don't.
It doesn't come down to being a super geek anymore, Mark. It's not hard to do, and it's because people are lazy. No, people are lazy, Mark. That's what it is. They want to just turn something on and have it work without putting any effort in.
Of course they do.
Deal with the default. And the default is for these companies is that they're going to sell your information to third parties because that's how they make money. It's the same thing that goes back to
people need to know that. See, that's my point is people need to know that it takes effort. And this is – I mean there's a lot of people, see, in the over age 40 age bracket that are not involved in social media. And this is really the big push. And this is one of the reasons Google Plus – has some of the features that it has.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, on privacy with Google Plus, it's easier to set up than it is for Facebook by far.
What about setting privacy profiles, Matthew? Is that just because that's a little tough to find and do on Facebook? I mean, I'll be honest, it really is. I mean, it really is hard to see and to know that what is private, what is not private. And, you know, kind of setting that up so that
In Google, by default, the privacy settings are way more locked down than they are by default inside Facebook.
OK.
Their privacy policies are much more transparent in Google Plus. It's written in much more plain language so you can understand a little bit better. Facebook, I think, intentionally obfuscates the settings for privacy because they don't want you to use them.
I think that's true.
I think they intentionally do it to make it so that it's tricky for you to figure out exactly what's going on and how to do it. Well, Google, by default, they really don't care because the only company they care about having your information is them.
It's Google.
Because they're already the advertising platform. They don't need to sell it to anybody else.
Well, that's the whole point. Yeah.
And with the integration with their other products, they have said that the Google Plus information will not be used for will not be made available to third-party advertisers. So far, they've had a pretty good track record when they said that that's going to be the case. With their YouTube data, they have said that their YouTube data and YouTube searches are not shared with advertisers, and there's never been any indication that they have. So they've got a multi-year track record of a product that is basically all about what people are looking at, that they could probably mine for billions of dollars if they chose to by selling that to their advertisers, and they have not done it. No. So until Google shows me that they will do this, I'm going to take them at their word that because they've shown a track record of not doing it when they said they're not going to. So yeah. I think also it's in their best interest not to, because I think they'd be inviting government intervention if they were. So I think that Google knows that that's a boundary they're not going to cross because they don't have to. Right. I think it's really going to be another market entirely for them where they won't need to. Because I've seen some people posting these things saying, hey, well, Facebook has all your social data, but at least they don't have your email. They don't have this. They don't have that. And if you go to Google, then they're going to have everything all in one place. Well, yes, they are. But that everything is already available all across the internet. I mean, if you are worried about a social network spreading data about you, you need to really look at the other data that's available from you about you from other places besides social networks, which is far more scary to me. Because what is available outside of social networks about you generally is far more problematic.
I like Been Verified. You know, you look yourself up on Been Verified and you're like, oh my God, how do people know? I mean, they know when I bought my house. They know who I bought my house from.
It's public records.
All that stuff's public record. And so, you know, they know the post office box that office that I thought no one knew. These are the kind of things. Now, you can have that changed and removed, but it is not easy to do. So
yeah, I mean, for you to expunge yourself from public records is a much more difficult process. And
You need to get the Ukrainian, mafia involved in that deal. But
yeah, I mean, in terms of privacy, I think, again, a lot of it is overplayed. Unless you've had problems with stalkers and things like that in the past, in which case then you've got some very legitimate concerns, you really need to look at those settings. For the most part, for 99% of the people out there, I wouldn't worry about it.
The one thing that I was concerned with, I haven't figured – maybe there is a way, but I haven't figured a way to port the data over from Facebook into Google+.
Okay. Here's the thing that – is, again, another advantage to Google Plus over Facebook. Facebook locks down your information. When you put stuff into Facebook, they don't want you to take it out because they want you to stay inside Facebook.
Right.
Google, what they've done is they've made it so that way anything in your account, you can export. You can export your entire account. Now, granted, there's not much in there yet for most people because it's –
No, but what I'm saying is can I import my contacts from – Facebook or LinkedIn into Google Plus?
Facebook has made it so that you cannot.
Yeah,
and that's Facebook's call, because Facebook has now – there used to be a tool that would allow Google Plus to go in and grab this data and then migrate it all over for you. And Facebook disabled it the day that Google Plus launched because they don't want people leaving Facebook for Google Plus, because they know that in general – Facebook's approval ratings among their user base is about up there with the IRS in terms of people don't like using Facebook. We use it because that's where everybody is.
It's all we have.
I dislike Facebook. I always have. I always liked the MySpace interface better than the Facebook interface because I thought that was a more user-friendly interface.
LinkedIn is like so much more valuable and so much more professional and I don't know, just allows you to really check people out good and share great information and look people up. And it's just so much better than Facebook.
But here's what you need to know about Google Plus right now for your business. Don't use it yet, because Google has told you if you set up a business profile inside Google Plus right now, we're going to delete it because it's not for businesses yet. They are planning a rollout of business profiles on Google Plus. You're probably a good at least 3 to 4 months away, probably more like 6 months away. When those do come out, it's going to be very easy for you to get in. But I'll tell you this, get a personal Google Plus account going now so you can familiarize yourself with the interface. You can see what the marketplace is going to be like. You can see how the system works. And when those Google Plus business profiles roll out, then you're going to be ready to go ahead and jump on those, and you'll know what you're doing. You won't have to learn how to use the entire interface.
Well, there you go. From the world of geekism, Matthew gives us the advice that we need. We'll cover a lot of ground today here, Matthew. A lot of ground, managing unmanageable employees, looking at, you know, what's happening in the world of small business and why we're driving the economy, you know, seeing how some other small businesses are dealing with some of the challenges, particularly royalty challenges that face us. So another great show. Look, I want to just let people know I'm looking forward to being in San Francisco with my friends at CBOM for a big event. We're expecting about 200 people, Matthew, at the San Francisco Convention Center on August 4th. So if you're listening from up in the Bay Area, come visit me. I'll be doing a presentation on how to get the most out of your web presence and online marketing. With CBOM. I don't think there's a cost to the event. They're going to serve a nice lunch. Free drinks, Matthew. Open bar. That ought to attract people.
Sounds good.
Yeah, open bar. San Francisco Convention Center. Go check it out. CBOM event. I'll be talking more about that on next week's show as well. Listening to the Small Business Hour, folks, do this. Have a positive, have a productive, and have a very profitable week. We'll see you next Monday.
The Small Business Hour is brought to you by CBOM, the last communications company a small business will ever need.